And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, you know, if there's anything we can believe in this world, it's Bible prophecy. And prophecy is extremely interesting, fascinating, awesome. Revelation 6 particularly, it says that there will be symbolically four horsemen of the apocalypse to come in the last days. You may have heard about the pale horse rider, and with him comes incredible bloodshed and death. There's the red horse, the white horse, the black horse. And with these incredible trials and tribulations upon the planet Earth comes a voice from heaven that says, touch not the oil and the wine. Isn't that interesting? Devastation upon the earth. But touch not the oil. Well, a lot of people wonder about that and say, I wonder what that means. Well, there seems to be a big play for oil these days, and a lot of people want to put a touch on the black gold, the petroleum that we call oil. Now, I come from an oil-rich state here in Texas, and from the time I was a little kid, you might say I was almost immersed in oil. And one of my first recollections as a young toddler of about 2 years old was smelling something funny and being told it was an oil refinery. I lived down in East Texas, little town called Port Neches next to Nederland. And when we kids would just take a little walk from our house, there was refineries on every side of us, oil refineries. And we got used to the smell of oil everywhere. But I remember when we had cousins and uncles and aunts and so forth would visit us from other states, they would come and say, pew-wee, what's that smell? Oil. And having lived right there with it, we got used to it. Well, I have a lot of relatives who've worked in the oil industry. My own brother, he's passed away to be on with the Lord now, but he was an executive for Sunoco Oil Company for many years, and in the oil industry with other companies as well. He and I had a lot of discussions about oil, petroleum, about the future of America and its oil and energy supplies. He disagreed with me on a few points. He was more into the oil industry and the corporate world than I was. But a lot of what he said made sense. And starting off in that career as a petroleum landman, he was out on the hustings and he saw a lot of the oil fields and knew where oil exploration was going on. And he also visited a lot of the oil derricks out in the Gulf and such, and he knew oil. That's one thing I can say about my brother Troy. He knew oil. And I remember back in 1973, I believe it was, we had the huge oil crisis here in America. The Arabs supposedly had cut off the supply of oil because they were angry about our favoring the Israelis. And they cut off our oil, we were told. And my brother told me that one of their big concerns at Sun Oil Company was the fact that they had so much oil they didn't know what to do with it all. We were being told in the newspapers that because the Arabs had cut off our oil, that those tankers were not parking along the coastal shores at the gasoline refineries, and so, you know, the price of gasoline rocketed about tripled or quadrupled in just a couple of weeks there. There were huge lines, miles, and there was rationing of gasoline. You could only buy, you know, on certain days according to your license plate number and so much. And people would get into fights in the lines about who was first to get in line. And sometimes you would burn, you know, a huge amount of gasoline just waiting to get your turn at the pump. The lines were so long. And my brother sort of chuckled. He said, you know, it's interesting. Those tankers are full. They won't let them discharge their oil at those refineries. It's not a matter of shortage of oil. We have more oil than we've ever had, he said. I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, that's a good question. But as far as the supply goes, we've got so much oil that's coming out our ears. I thought how different that is. Here's a man who intimately knew the oil industry, and he was telling me we're awash with oil. Some years later, he was telling me about his experiences with the Texas Railroad Commission. Now, their name is Railroad Commission, but it's because it's an antiquated organization. Actually, they should be the Texas Oil and Gas Commission. That's what they do. You cannot drill an oil well in the state of Texas without getting permission from the Texas Railroad Commission. And they tell you not only where you can drill, how often you can drill, how deep you can drill, but how much oil you can take out of the ground. How many barrels per each one. And you have to submit reports to them. You know, such and such an oil field, such and such a survey, this and that piece of land, you allowed us to take 848 barrels this month, and we took out 847.6 barrels this month. They tell you by barrel how much you can take out of the land, the oil. Now, the rationale supposedly is that they don't want all the oil to leave at once. They said that if they don't control it and ration it to the oil companies, that they might go in and pull it all out of the ground all at once. Not very likely, but anyway, that's their story. And we've got to make this oil last a long time. So they ration it out and tell the companies how much they can bring out. And if you believe there's oil on your land, you may never get a license. In other words, a permit to go in there and drill for the oil. It's just going to sit there forever and ever and ever. Of course, my brother chuckled once again. He said, you know, the real reason why they control the supply of oil coming out of the ground. I said, why? He says, well, it's supply and demand. They're trying to help the oil industry to make sure the price stays high. Obviously, the oil companies want to make money, but they've all got it figured out now. We all cooperate and graduate. The oil companies have figured it out that if they will just all work together and with the government, and by the way, that's why we have a Department of Energy at federal level, to make sure the oil companies don't take too much out of the ground. Not that they'll ever run out. They know we'll never run out of oil, but they don't want the price to go down. The same thing happens with other commodities. I talked with a farmer in Oklahoma, and he owned quite a bit of land. And I was asking him what kind of crops he had, and he told me, he says, you know, I'd like to plant peanuts. There's more money in peanuts. I said, well, plant them. He said, well, I can't. The government told me I can't plant peanuts. I said, the government, how can they tell you what to plant on your land? He said, you don't understand farming, Mr. Mars. We plant what the government tells us to plant. I said, well, if I wanted to plant peanuts, I'd buy me a bunch of land and plant it. He says, well, nobody will buy it then unless you have a permit from the government. You've got to have an allotment. I said, well, why would they do such a foolish thing as that? He says, don't you understand? They want to make sure that there's not too many peanuts produced. They want to keep the price high. Oh. Oh, well, I had no idea. He says, sure. He says, why, they pay farmers, many farmers, thousands of farmers, millions and millions of dollars not to grow peanuts. He said, don't you understand? You have to pay $3 or $4 for a jar of peanut butter at the store. If they let everybody do peanuts, why, you could get it for 59 cents probably. I said, well, I'd like to buy peanut butter at 59 cents. My wife would like to do it. He said, well, sure, everybody would. This way, though, we all make more money and you people have to pay. And he laughed. Sort of like my brother's chuckle. We make sure, working with the government now, that not so much oil comes out of the ground, and then that means we can charge more for it because it's scarce. There's plenty there, but we make sure it's scarce. And the government works with us to shaft you, the people. That's the way it goes. Well, I want to talk today about oil. You know, oil seems to be the primary commodity that drives the world. Now, I know we need a lot of oil and gas to drive the world, to heat our homes, to run our automobiles and so forth, our airplanes. Even industry needs for its machinery a certain amount of oil. I understand all that. But it seems this is one resource that God has made a lot of. And not only that, contrary to the crazy so-called scientist, God has made it a resource that keeps being replenished over and over. There's a lot of ground underground. Let's put it that way. A lot of rock and minerals underground. And you know, oil is one that just keeps bubbling up. It's no doubt inexhaustible. And scientists that are worth anything admit that we have been lied to for many decades, ever since the Rockefellers began the huge commercial oil industry in America. And yes, it was the Rockefellers. John D. Rockefeller founded Standard Oil Company, and he drove or bought up almost every other oil company in America until he owned a monopoly. And it was only, I believe, in 1912 that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Standard Oil was such a monopoly that it had to be split up into subordinate companies, sort of like AT&T. What happened to AT&T in the phone business about 30 years ago? That happened to Standard Oil. But unfortunately, when they broke up into many smaller companies, they all worked behind the scenes and had many times the same boards of directors and such and cooperated. And then finally, we got a Department of Energy back in the 70s, I believe under President Jimmy Carter. And guess what? It began to cooperate with the oil companies. So now the government's in bed with the oil companies. Now we have two oil men that are president and vice president of the United States. They've really got an advantage over us, don't they? And they set the price what they want it to be. And you and I must pay it or else. And since President Bush has come into office, what is it going up? Maybe triple? 300%? Has your salary, have your wages gone up 300%? Have your earnings increased that much in the last 7.5 years? Well, if they were, well, God bless you. Wonderful for you. But it hasn't happened to very many people. In fact, the standard of living in America has actually declined. There's more poverty-stricken people in America. There's more people that have been demoted from the middle class to the poverty class since the Bushes took office, and the Clintons, of course, even before them, when the slide of the middle class began. I want to talk to you today about Planet Petroleum. Planet Petroleum. I call it Planet Petroleum because we are a planet, Earth, that is awash with oil. Awash with oil. We've got so much oil, we'll never use it. Not in 1,000 years, not in 10,000 years, because it keeps bubbling up. And the oceans consume most of the world's surface, and they continue to find oil under the oceans, deep down in the oceans. And as our technology improves, and our oil drilling rigs are able to go deeper and deeper into the crust of the oceans, and below that, we find even more oil. And so, we will never run out of oil. I want to repeat that, because there has been a lie. I first read about it when I was a little boy. You see, living in East Texas, and my father actually worked at an oil refinery. He was a union man. They would bring home all these publications, and I would read them, and I read scare stories. Now, remember, this was old, let's say, about 1950, 51. And I would read one of those oil industry publications, maybe Humble Oil that was owned by Exxon or Pure Oil or Sun Oil or even DuPont, which was a chemical company, but they used a lot of oil. And I would read these scare stories, and I remember reading articles. I was a big reader even as a young boy, and I would read articles that said all the oil in America will be used up by 1965 or 1960 or 1968. Each one of the studies would have a little bit different year, you know. And then in the 1960s, it began to put it off a little bit more. By 1980, the whole world will have exhausted all its oil. It's a fossil resource, you see. And the way oil was made was that huge dinosaurs died. And when they died, their body decomposed and turned into oil. And that's where we get oil from. Now, friends, I don't even think a five-year-old kid ought to believe a story like that. Daddy, where do we get our oil? Well, you see, son, dinosaurs, these big, gigantic, prehistoric creatures died. They were about a football field long, and when they died, it took millions of years for their body to decompose, and when it decomposed, it turned into oil. And that's why this is fossil fuel. Oh. Yeah, this is dinosaur fuel, man. Oh, I see, Daddy. I think a young kid would probably look at his dad and say, boy, I love my dad, but he's sort of an idiot. But don't say that, because kids shouldn't say that, but they should. But you know what? That's what daddies are telling their kids now, if they're telling them anything at all. Actually, most daddies have no idea where oil comes from. This comes from the earth. But the stupid scientists, the same ones who tell us global warming is true, and who once warned us that the world was going into a great ice age, but now tell us it's going into a great warming age, which is proven, of course, to be a hoax. The same scientists who tell us we all, as human beings, came from apes and monkeys, or even before that, bacteria and protozoa and frogs or amphibians or whatever, who came up out of the slime and out of the mud and became people somehow, miraculously. They tell us that these are fossil oils, and because they're fossil oils, we're using them all up. There were only so many dinosaurs and other critters in the world that turned into oil, and now, bingo, they're all going to be gone, all that oil. But a strange thing happened to oil men, just the everyday oil men. You see, many oil men, especially the independent wildcatters, they drilled for the oil back in the 1920s and 30s. And they pulled all the oil up in those wells, and then suddenly the wells tuckered out. No more oil seemed to be coming up. So they just capped the oil, which really means they just dropped a bunch of wet cement down in it and closed it up, plugged it up. Well, that well's run out. Let's go find oil somewhere else. Well, you know, some oil men, though, said, you know, there was a little bit of oil in there. I think I'll go ahead and open it back up, take the concrete cap off, and take what's there. Because oil, after all, has gone up now. It was, you know, selling $5-6 a barrel back then, but now it's selling, hey, 50, 60, 70. Now it's up to what? $115, $117 a barrel. So they're finding that it's worth their while to go back and uncap those all old oil wells and try to get whatever little bit is left. It was only the dregs, they thought. But hey, even dregs are worth some money when oil is now $117 a barrel. But to their amazement, when they brought in the new rigs and began to drill again in those old oil wells that they thought were empty, they were full up again. Somehow, something had happened deep under the earth, and all the percolating had occurred, and new oil was there. And the wells produced just as if they were new once again. Evidently, there are natural processes, biotic processes, going on under the earth. You see, the oil industry really just began in earnest around the turn of the 20th century. So they didn't know this. So many of the oil fields, such as Spindle Top and others that they, in Beaumont, Texas, that they capped off, they're only now going back. And once they found in several of the oil fields that there's more oil suddenly collected again, well, now it's worth their while to go back to all the old oil fields and wells. And they're finding that they're all full of oil, or most of them are at least. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon, is it not? Oil seems to be a replenishing resource. And the earth just seems to create more and more. You take it all out, you come back in 20 years, it fills up again, and you take that out. There seem to be huge reservoirs, almost like tanks, natural tanks under the earth. And then there's the new discoveries. Now, I'm telling you all this because I want you to understand. A scam has been going on in America and the world for the last century. We've been lied to. We've been told that such a theory called peak oil is true. That once we've used up all the oil, it's over with. We won't have anything left. So we must conserve. And you've got to buy some little bitty rinky-dink car. And gasoline, of course, must be $3, $4, $5, why even $10 or $20 a gallon at the pump to conserve. And the liberal environmentalists tell us it's good if the government would lay a $5 a gallon tax on it. Why? To conserve. But what if there's so much oil that it will never run out? What if gasoline really should be a dime a gallon, a nickel a gallon? What if you can buy yourself a huge automobile? A gigantic gas guzzler, and it doesn't matter because there's so much gasoline, we can never use it. It's replenishing all the time. Things would change, would they not? For one thing, we wouldn't have to go over to the Middle East and get involved. We're told now the reason we're in the Middle East, the reason we're dying, shedding blood, over 4,000 Americans in Iraq is because of the oil that's there. Next, we want to take on Iran. Now, we don't worry about nations in Africa and other places that don't have oil. But it seems we have a fascination with these few that do have oil. Meanwhile, the Saudi Arabian and Kuwaiti and Bahrain and Qatar oil sheikhs have sort of got us by the back of the ear, don't they? Grabbing hold of us. They can do with us politically whatever they want to. The Arabs, the Muslims, right? They got the oil and we want it. And Japan is desperate. And China is desperate. And Europe is yearning and hungry for oil. And it seemed up to now that only those few places had oil. But now Russian oil men are saying, we've got so much oil, we'll never run out. And from what I understand, the American oil companies are saying, shh, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. They're telling the president of Kazakhstan, shh, don't tell everybody that those Baku oil fields have so much oil. Shh. They're telling Canada, pass environmental laws. Don't get all that oil out right now. Don't start bringing it up. People will find out we have too much oil. What happens when the people, the common people, the men and women of this world, the working people, begin to understand that the world is Planet Petroleum awash with oil? They'll demand the price come down. They'll demand it. Now, I want to tell you about just recently some oil discoveries. And I don't think that most of you have heard about these things. They're not really broadcast much on the news. It's rare if you hear anything at Fox News Network or MSNBC or ABC or CBS. I don't think Katie Couric is going to tell you about this on the CBS News or Brian Williams or NBC, ABC. No, you're not going to read this in the New York Times. But I have gone to some extensive research to find out some amazing things. Oil is being found everywhere. And then no sooner is it discovered than everybody is told to shh, keep quiet about this. Let's look at this. Because I want you to understand something. America has so much oil, we ourselves don't have to buy 1 gallon from a foreign source. We don't need Middle East oil. We don't need Venezuelan oil. We have plenty right here in our own homeland. But they don't want you to know about it. And by the way, I also want you to understand another fact. John F. Kennedy, this is one of the reasons I believe he was slain. He refused to go along with this environmental malarkey. Did you know that John F. Kennedy was opposed to environmentalism? That's right. You'll have to read a book we've got. It's entitled Battling Wall Street. Battling Wall Street, the true story of President John F. Kennedy. He told U.S. Steel, no, you will not raise your prices. That's right. He told the oil companies, no, you will not raise your oil prices. They didn't like that. They were glad when he was gone, the corporations, so that they could start gouging us. And one of the things they did was to invent an environmental movement. It hadn't even really existed up until President Kennedy's time. Then all this malarkey about Mother Earth and the green movement, environmentalism and Save Mother Earth and Gaia, and all of this suddenly came to the fore. The Endangered Species Act. And they twisted the arm of Richard Nixon, and he was already in desperate straits as president, and so he approved the Endangered Species Act. I want you to understand there's many so-called conservation and environmental groups today, nonprofit groups. They're some of the most powerful lobbying groups in America. And I want you to understand who funds these groups, who sponsors them. The Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, the Environmental Defense Council. They all have offices in Washington, D.C. and all the state capitals. They're getting all these environmental bills passed, and they're preventing us from building new gasoline refineries. They're preventing us from going out and drilling for more and more oil in America and off our coastlines. Would you like to know who is paying them to do all the lobbying work? Who is paying the Nature Conservancy and the Sierra Club and so forth and Greenpeace? It's the oil companies. Now, why would Exxon and Mobil and all Shell and British Petroleum and all of them, why would they pay environmental companies all this nonprofit groups, so-called. Why would they pay for all this lobbying so that bills could be passed that would make it more difficult for them to drill? Oh, yes. Do you get it? Do you understand what I'm telling you? They don't want to produce all that oil. It'll make the price of oil go down. And so the environmental organizations are the helpers of the oil industry. The helpers. They help to keep the price high by keeping oil supplies scarce. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to a special report today. Planet Petroleum, a world awash in oil. I'm going to tell you more on the other side and what we need to do to make sure that our economy doesn't falter and fall, and we don't all end up as paupers because of the oil hoax in America today. Be right back after this brief message. Did John F. Kennedy oppose the moneyed elitist who gave us the powerful environmental movement? Well, Dr. Donald Gibson from the University of Pittsburgh says that's exactly what happened. And he's written a fascinating book, the only book like it that I've ever seen. It's entitled Battling Wall Street, John F. Kennedy and His Secret War with the Conspiracy. Did you know that John F. Kennedy was at war with the conspiracy? Oh, yes. Just a few weeks before his death, he gave a speech in which he warned the American people about the secret societies. That's right. He warned America about the secret societies. Now, in this book, Dr. Gibson documents how JFK took on Wall Street, and he made many bitter enemies in the process. One of those enemies was David Rockefeller. President Kennedy made it plain that he was pro-growth. He was for industrial growth. He wanted to put men to work in the factories, in the manufacturing of America. Oh, this brought him into direct war, direct conflict with the elitist on Wall Street. Because even then, they were figuring out ways that they could outsource jobs, outsource manufacturing, how they could put America out of work. After JFK died, America became a rust belt. Through the Midwest, all the factories and manufacturing plants began to close one after another. After JFK's death, the elite under the leadership of President Lyndon Johnson produced the report from Iron Mountain, and it set forth the establishment's agenda to control you and me, that is the masses, through a fictitious environmental crisis and a mania to so-called save Mother Earth. Well, Battling Wall Street explains why the men of money, the lords of money, wanted JFK out of the way. He was an obstacle to their no-growth, anti-American agenda. You can say what you want to about John F. Kennedy. And I'm sure there's some Republicans that don't like him, and there's some of this and some of that. But I know this much. The lords of money hated the man. They wanted him dead. He wanted a true world peace without nuclear weapons. They wanted war. He wanted to put people to work. They wanted to make more money. And they could care less if they had to do it on the backs of the workers. In this, John F. Kennedy was a bona fide hero of America. You've got to have this book. It's 195 pages, only $15. Ask for Battling Wall Street. Battling Wall Street by Donald Gibson. Now, to get your book, just call us toll free during the workday now, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Now, remember, please add $4 shipping and handling, a total of $19. Ask for the book, Battling Wall Street. It's available, of course, on our website, powerofprophecy.com as well. All right. Now, our address, if you'd like to send us a check or a money order or cash, $19, and that's postpaid, and we'll get this book right to you. Battling Wall Street by Donald Gibson, Dr. Donald Gibson, professor at the University of Pittsburgh. And by the way, I've interviewed Dr. Gibson on this radio program, and he's a fascinating guest, full of information and facts. Battling Wall Street, send $19. That'll be postpaid. Now, everything will be paid for when we get your check or money order or cash. Ask for Battling Wall Street. Send that to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, let's return to our regular program. We're looking at corporate interest, in particular, the moneyed oil corporations of America. They're really not the corporations of America anymore. They're the multinational conglomerate corporations. Listen to some of the evidence that the world is awash with oil. That's why I call it Planet Petroleum. Here's something from 2008. This was published everywhere, really, on the internet. I'm looking at an article, WorldNet Daily, of September 5, 2006, actually. And it was republished again just recently, 2008, on worldnetdaily.com. Massive oil field found under Gulf of Mexico. Reserves could rival the North Slope and boast U.S. supplies by 50%. One gigantic new source of oil, friends, could boost the United States total supplies by 50%. It says Chevron and two oil exploration companies announced the discovery of a giant oil reserve in the Gulf of Mexico that could boost the nation's supplies by as much as 50% and provide compelling evidence that oil is a plentiful deep earth product made naturally on a continuous basis. Known as the Jack Field, the reserve, some 270 miles southwest of New Orleans, is expected to hold as much as 15 billion barrels of oil. Wow. Isn't that amazing? By the way, authors Jerome Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, and Craig R. Smith wrote about this gigantic oil find in their book, Black Gold Stranglehold. They said that it was a myth that there's scarcity of oil. It's all a matter of politics. And they presented in their book, Black Gold Stranglehold, scientific evidence that oil does not come from the remains of ancient plant and animal life, but is made naturally by the earth. We must reject the false theories that oil and natural gas are biological products. Corsi told WorldNet Daily, Chevron's find in the Gulf of Mexico validates the scientific argument that the Gulf is a huge resource for finding oil and natural gas. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal, now here's another article I have, the Wall Street Journal talking about the same incredible find. The Wall Street Journal reports that the current reserves of America are 29.3 billion barrels, 29 billion. So if we have found 15 billions more, 50% more overnight in this discovery. It says Chevron discovered the field by drilling the deepest to date in the Gulf of Mexico, down 28,175 feet. Wow. 7 miles below the surface of the earth. Isn't that interesting? Wow. Now I want to mention to you, friends, the second biggest source of oil in the world is in Mexico, in the Gulf of Mexico, on the coastlands there, you know, right off the landmass of Mexico. It's the Cantari field near the Yucatan Peninsula, discovered in 1976. And who was it discovered by? Chevron, Exxon, British Petroleum, Shell, a fisherman. He noticed that the fish where he wanted to fish kept dying. And he also noticed there was a little oil seep that kept bubbling up there in Campeche Bay. And he kept telling everybody about it, but the oil companies didn't seem to be interested until it started being reported in local newspapers. And then suddenly they showed some interest. Well, they didn't want to find it, friends. They knew about it for a long time. Probably decades. But until this little old fisherman complained about his fish dying because of the oil bubbling up, they didn't want to do a thing about it. Well, let's go a little further. Here's another one. This one just came out. Listen to this. Brazil. Everybody's been worried about how Brazil was going to pay its big debt. Oh, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank says, oh, poor Brazil. They've got such a huge debt they have to pay back the world's banks. Well, don't worry anymore. Brazil has just found April 14th. This is according to Bloomberg Financial News, one of the world's most reliable financial stock market and financial news sources. Bloomberg News on April 14th reported that Petróleo Brasileiro, that's Brazil's state petroleum company, has discovered oil in its Carioca offshore field that may hold 33 billion barrels of oil. Now, remember, throughout the United States, California, Oklahoma, Texas, Alaska. They say we only have 29 billion barrels. And in this one field, Brazil says we have 33 billion, more than in all the United States combined. Wow. In fact, this will be the third largest oil field ever discovered, and that includes Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and it's right down here in South America. It only makes sense. Venezuela, already today, the country of Venezuela in South America, friends, is what, the third or fourth largest oil-producing nation in the world? And now its next-door neighbor, Brazil in South America, a company they just call Petrobras, Petróleo Brasileiro, says we have 33 billion barrels of oil we've discovered. Now, in all of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, there are only 83 billion. So here they found 33 billion in one little place in the ocean. Do you remember the little war that Britain had with Argentina some years ago? Over the little islands called the Falklands. And nobody could understand why Britain wanted that. They said that, I think what it had, like 500 or 600 people living on it. You know, most of them spoke English, but still. Argentina said the Falklands belongs to us, these little islands off in the Atlantic, in the Caribbean there, basically, south of the Caribbean. And Britain says, no, Falkland Islands belong to us. And they fought a war, a major war, Britain and Argentina, over these nondescript little islands. Well, now you know why. Oil. There's oil. There's oil in the Atlantic. There's oil in the Gulf of Mexico. There's oil everywhere on planet Earth. It's a planet awash in oil, dear friends. Well, let me read you a little bit more. It says Dick Gibson, a geologist who advises oil and natural gas producers, says this is a significant find. The whole area off the coast of Brazil is becoming a new oil province. This is a giant field. Well, Merrill Lynch, one of the largest Wall Street firms in the world, their oil industry analyst, Frank McGann and Sharif Koya, said in a note to clients, quote, "This is a giant field under any circumstances, and it potentially dwarfs Brazil's existing reserves." Brazil, until this oil find, had said that it held an estimated 12 billion barrels. Now, with 33 billion more, they will have 45 billion, almost twice as much as the United States alone. Wow. Now, remember I told you about the Jack field discovered by Chevron in the Gulf of Mexico. That was discovered in 2004. And now, a few years later, they discover one that's even bigger down in Brazil. By the way, the Brazilian stock market went wild. Almost every company, the telephone company, department stores, everything, everybody wanted to buy into Brazil. They said Brazil's going to be one of the richest countries in the world. All that oil. But watch out. Do you really think the oil companies are going to let all that oil come up out of the ground? Maybe they will find there's problems. Yeah, it's too deep. Well, it just didn't pan out like we thought. Well, our newest oil rigs show that it's not as significant as we thought. They'll find some way to cover it up. This news keeps coming out, and they keep finding ways to cover it up. Well, here's something for you. I'm not finished yet, dear friends. You know, we had a big war in Kosovo, Yugoslavia. A lot of people said, why should NATO and the United States send all those troops, all those Air Force reserves? We spent billions of dollars to become involved with this war in Kosovo. Why? What is that all about? Well, they don't have anything of interest there. Aha! Well, hold on, dear friends. Listen to this article from Global Research, February 19, 2008, entitled, and listen to this, Large Potential Albanian Oil and Gas Discovery Underscores Kosovo's Importance. Oh, do you think the oil companies knew about this beforehand? Do you think that might be why we're in Albania, Yugoslavia, Serbia, Kosovo? Well, according to this report, Swiss-based Manas Petroleum Corporation broke some news. Evidently, large prospects of oil and gas reserves in Kosovo. Already, they've found around 3 billion barrels of oil. Well, how interesting. In Kosovo. Now we know why we fought a war there and why Clinton sent our Air Force in there and bombed passenger trains and skyscrapers. And then we took the president, what was his name, Milosevic, put him before the world court and tried him. We wanted the oil. Or maybe we wanted just to bottle it up. Tighten it up. Turn off the spigot. But wait, there's more. Here's another story that just came out. Massive oil deposit in North Dakota. North Dakota. Why, nobody wants to live in North Dakota. Nobody cares about that wilderness area, do they? South of North Dakota, I mean, that's the armpit of America. Oh, yeah, well, hold on. February 13, 2008. Massive oil deposit could increase U.S. reserves by 10 times. America, says this news report, is sitting on top of a supermassive 200 billion barrel oil field that could potentially make America energy independent and until now has largely gone unnoticed. Thanks to new technology, the Bakken Formation in North Dakota, that's B-A-K-K-E-N, could boost America's oil reserves by an incredible 10 times and give Western economies, especially the United States, the trump card against OPEC's squeeze on the oil supply. It could even make Iranian and Venezuelan threats of disrupted supply irrelevant. Well, can we really believe this report? Yes, it came out from the U.S. Geological Survey. The Bakken Oil Formation covers North Dakota and portions of South Dakota and Montana. And with new horizontal drilling technology, it is believed that 175 to 500 billion barrels of recoverable oil held in this 200,000 square mile reserve can be brought up from the ground. And listen to this. This oil reserve was initially discovered in 1951, but the oil companies had overlooked it since then. Oh, yes. Oh, sure. But the U.S. Geological Survey did a study in 1999. But it was not until 2007 when a small company, EOG Resources of Texas, drilled a single well in partial North Dakota that is now expected to yield 700,000 barrels of oil, that real excitement and money started to flow into North Dakota. Marathon Oil is now investing $1.5 billion and drilling 300 new oil wells. This is expected to be the greatest boom in oil discovery since oil was discovered in Saudi Arabia in 1938. Folks, you want to make some money? Go to South and North Dakota. But who found it? Some little old bitty nondescript oil drilling company. Who found the oil down in Mexico? A huge oil find. A little fisherman that complained about the oil bubbling up and killing the fish. Everywhere I drive in Texas, you know, some years ago, my dad asked me, said, son, you want to visit the place where you were born, Fred, Texas, in East Texas? He's not much there, but, you know, a little for sentimental value. Why don't we go visit your birthplace. I said, okay, Dad, that'd be great. I'd only visited Fred a couple of times when I was a kid. So here I was about 25 years old. Dad said, let's go visit Fred. Well, you know, Fred is sort of a big standing joke in Texas. You know, there's the old joke, you know, because Texas has so many place names that are sort of funny. You know, we have a London, Texas, and a Moscow, Texas, and Albany, Texas, Cleveland, Texas. It goes on and on. But there's the old joke, you know, about somebody visited Texas and they said, wrote back home and they said, I slept in comfort between Fred and Alice. I slept in comfort between Fred and Alice. And of course, the joke naturally is there's towns in Texas named Fred and Alice in comfort. And so the joke is a true one, but it sounds a little funny. So we went to Fred, Texas, of all places. Little burg, probably only has a few hundred people in East Texas. And Dad says, right there was where our house was. The house was no more. Yeah, that's where you were born, in that house, a mid-nurse delivered gen. We walked on that land. And as we were walking on the land, I noticed there was oil that had seeped up. And there was actually oil on it. And I talked to my dad about it. He says, yeah, he says, you know, I didn't know a thing about oil at the time. I didn't know there was oil here, but there's oil here. And he said a company came in. They didn't call themselves an oil company. They had another name. And they paid me a lot more than everybody else was getting for their land in these parts. So I sold them the land. Some years later, somebody told me that actually was an oil company under a dummy front name. And they were buying land out in this area. And they just bottled it up. He said, they don't even drill here. I said, well, Dad, look, the ground is bad here. You can see there's actually oil markings. You know, it's you've seen where oil kills the grass and everything. You could see there was oil that had come up to the surface. It was so much oil there and was sort of sitting on the top in, you know, very thin, little bitty shallow puddles, killing all of the brush and such. My dad said, oh, yeah, there's plenty of oil here, but they'll probably never get around to drilling it. Never get around to drilling it, but there's plenty of oil there. And my poor old dad sold it probably for a pittance. And went to work as a working man, a union man, making money by the hour, barely keeping his family fed, but he was a hard-working man. I remember my dad worked many overtime hours. You know, they'd pay you time and a half, double time on holidays. And my dad, to keep our family going, would work a lot of hours, sometimes 60, 70 hours a week. And yet he had owned that oil land all the time, sold it to a company that had a fake name because they didn't want to tell people that they were an oil company buying up their land. Just one story of many. Does that make me bitter? Nah, not at all. But it tells you a little bit about the oil industry and how we are awash in oil and they're hiding it from people. Recently reading the business page of the Austin American Statesman. Austin, of course, is the capital of Texas. And every once in a while, they'll have articles in here that keep up with the oil industry. And here's an interesting one. At Houston Expo, they had a big expo, a big business exhibition. High oil prices mean business. It says, in a time of plenty for the oil industry, exploration firms and investors connect at a convention. You see, they had a big convention in Houston, Texas. And even though we seem to be in the middle of a recession, they said here in this article, recession? What recession? There's thousands of wheeler dealer oil men gathering in downtown Houston this week to buy, sell, and trade oil and gas projects. They're shelling out millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, for new oil field equipment. Now listen to this. It says 900 companies, 900 oil companies are at this Houston Expo. Most of them small companies. The bulk of them are small independents. Independents that concentrate solely on exploration and production. Now I want you to think about that, friends. We're not talking about the Exxons. We're talking about 900 small companies. And they love it when oil is $117 or so a barrel. They're making a lot of money. They're the ones going out and finding the oil. And when they find oil, like up in North and South Dakota and Montana, guess what happens? The big oil companies come in and buy up those oil wells from them and then close them down. Because they don't want people to know. They don't want that oil. And the Department of Energy comes in and finds fault. Well, you drilled this way wrong, or you did this wrong. You're not keeping good records. That's one of the things the Department of Energy does in Washington, D.C. If you're a small oil company, they'll harass you. Because they don't want you to find oil. Because if you go out and say, I found oil in Mississippi, I found oil in Ohio, I found oil in Florida, I found oil, I'm an independent wildcatter, I found oil in New Mexico, they say, shut up. We don't want people to know how much oil America has. The planet is awash in oil, dear friends. Awash in oil. Well, I can go on and on with these oil discovery news things. But let's go on to another subject. Time magazine. The Times, the London Times. One of the most influential newspapers in the world. Here's a January 18, 2008 article I wanted you to know about. It says, world is not running out of oil, say experts. According to the business editor, the world business editor of the London Times newspaper, it says, doom-laden forecasts that world oil supplies are poised to fall off the edge of a cliff are wide off the mark, according to leading oil industry experts. Wow. A landmark study of more than 800 oil fields by Cambridge Energy Research Associates has concluded that the rates of decline are very small, and oil output will continue to rise over the next decade. Awash with oil. But it is true, the environmental movement doesn't want us to build any more gasoline refineries, and that's just fine with Exxon and Shell and Texaco and all the others. They don't want them built either. The more gasoline refineries are out there, the more gas will be available at the pump, and the cheaper the price will be. So they're more than happy to get in bed with the environmental nonprofit groups. And the Department of Energy, run by the oil companies, says, oh, yes, sir, brother. We've got to keep oil and gas expensive to conserve. But there's no reason to conserve. Now, friends, there's only one way to fight lies, and it's with the truth. Tell everybody you know, all of this stuff about peak oil is baloney. The world is planet petroleum. We are awash in oil. There's so much we'll never run out. And it keeps providing more and more and more. This is Tex Mars. It's great to be with you this week. You know, isn't it absolutely fun? Isn't it thrilling to know the truth? You know, Jesus said the truth will set you free. And that's what we do here at Power of Prophecy. We simply tell the truth. It makes some people mad. It makes some people angry. It makes them furious because they want to live the lie. But not me. How about you? Well, my prayer, dear friends, is that each week during this same time, you'll tune in. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.